to the Humanity Church Podcast, a place where meaningful conversations around living by faith, being known by love, and becoming a voice of hope are shared with the world every week. We hope that you enjoy this podcast and will join us live on Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, online, or at the historic Fox Theater in beautiful downtown Pomona. We also host humanity groups that meet all throughout the city and online to continue the conversation and support you in your ongoing spiritual journey. Find one near you by visiting humanitychurch.com. If you would like to financially support this podcast or the ongoing work at Humanity Church, you can text any donation amount to 84321 and give directly from your phone. Now, here's this week's podcast.
I want to start out today reading this passage in John chapter 8, starting in verse 31, that so many of you may have heard already. And it says, "To the Jews who had believed him, Jesus said, 'If you hold to my teachings, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.'" One of the things that I find that all of us are looking for is, how do we live a free life? How are we set free? Free from fear, free from despair, free from the brokenness, free from the weight of life. How do we release ourselves from all the things that are keeping us from stepping into the fullness that we know is available to us? But here's the thing. I find that most of us are really clear about what's keeping us bound and how to stay away from those things. We're clear about the fear that we don't want. We're clear about the brokenness that we don't want. We're clear about the weight that we're holding. Knowing what keeps you in bondage is very different from knowing what sets you free. There's a big difference between those two, because there's a difference between saying, "I shouldn't eat the donut," and saying, "I'm going to become healthy," right? Those are two very different things. They're two very different come-froms. Jesus has come to set us free, and he says, here's how you will be set free. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, in our modern context, we think that if I can regurgitate the information, then I'm free. Thank you, modern school system, right? We think that if I can just regurgitate the information, then somehow I'm free. But that's not what Jesus is talking about when he says, "You will know the truth and the truth will set you free." He's saying that when you become intimate with this truth, when you become like one with this truth, then it will set you free. And here's how you know that you've become one with the truth, is that it actually shows up in your decision making. It actually shows up in how you live. It shows up in how you show up with every single person that you come in contact with. And this is what Jesus is talking about. When you are intimate with the truth, it will change how you engage life. And so today, I want to talk about a truth that I believe will set you completely free if you know it. Not just know it like a concept, but know it like you're intimate with its reality. Where we're going back into our series, Relational Revival. And we spent the first quarter of the year really engaging what it looks like to align our hearts with God. And we're spending the next couple months looking at what it looks like to align our hearts with other people, because they are connected. That how we relate to God is how we relate to other people, and how we relate to other people is how we live to God. And so we're stepping into this moment, and today's conversation may actually be one of the most critical of all of them. Because of all the conversations that I ever have with people, this one is the one that keeps people the most bound up. And I would actually say that 99% of what keeps people stuck in life has to do with what we are going to talk about today. It is the secret sauce to transforming your life and stepping into the future that you long to step into with the people that you say you love. And so in Matthew chapter 18, starting in verse 21, Jesus is having a conversation with Peter, and who was one of his followers, by the way. And Peter came to Jesus and asked, "Lord, how many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to seven times?" Jesus answered, "I tell you, not seven times, but 77 times." I love this moment with Peter, because he thinks he's being so generous, right? And he comes up to Jesus attempting to impress him, right? "Jesus, how many times should we forgive someone?" "Seven times," right? And I think he's thinking, "Wow, look at my generosity and my forgiveness." And Jesus responds essentially with, "Oh, Peter, that's so cute," right? And he says, "No, not seven times, 77 times. Now, of course, Jesus isn't giving us a formula. He's not like, "Forgive 77 times, on the 78th, cut them off," right? He's not giving us that formula. He's essentially saying, no, you are to keep going. This is an attitude, this is a lifestyle, this is a way of being that you are to engage in on a regular basis. And he's saying, you don't stop forgiving. Why is it that we have such a hard time with forgiveness? Why is it that this is the one thing that we struggle with so much? That we find all kinds of needs to qualify why we should or shouldn't forgive. We find all kinds of ways to qualify when we should forgive and when we shouldn't and how much and who's deserving of it. And then we have all these surrounding conversations that are cultural around it. Like, how do I put boundaries in? How do I self-protect? How do I do X, Y, Z? And we find ourselves complicating a very simple conversation that Jesus invites us into. Why is there such a resistance towards generous forgiveness? See, most of the metaphors used in the scriptures around forgiveness are financial. In fact, forgiveness is a financial conversation that we're using metaphors around finances when we talk about this. So I actually think it's a great metaphor to use when we engage this conversation around forgiveness. See, when we are born with a full account. And what I mean when I say that is we are born with our identity account completely full. We are born with our love accounts completely full. We are born with our accounts of hope and of freedom and of confidence and of love completely full. Our bank account internally is unlimited. And have you ever been around a little kid? You know exactly what I'm talking about, right? Their imagination is off the charts, their ability to love. I mean, I'm always amazed that when I take my kids to the park, still to this day, they can instantly go out and make friends and start playing instantly. Us adults would probably have a panic attack if we were asked to do that. But for some reason, we're born with these full accounts. But here's the thing. Along the way, with all of us, someone made an illicit withdrawal out of our account. They made an illegal withdrawal out of our account. Someone took something from you. They betrayed you and they took trust. They overstepped a boundary and they took love. They took away protection or innocence or hope. So now we have an account that is at a deficit. Now our account is no longer full, unlimited. Now when we look at our account, it's showing a negative balance from what we know we are called to live in. And so now they owe us something. The world owes us something. We are now at a loss rather than in a conversation of abundance. And by the way, I know it's really easy for some of us to hear this conversation and say, well, that's for people who have really messed up lives. Or that's for people who have a crazy past, you know, who have gone through all kinds of things. But you know what I'm always amazed at is the small things in our life that affects the trajectory of where we go. In my coaching with so many people, I've had conversation where in our conversations around, hey, where does the perceived scarcity or where does the lack show up? And it almost always comes down to something small. Like, oh, dad didn't show up to all of my baseball games. And I made that mean that I wasn't worthy. And so I started living a smaller life. Or mom had these really high expectations of me and I didn't really know how to relate to those. And so I found myself thinking that it was hopeless. Or my best friend, I told him this secret and then they told my other best friend and I was betrayed and now I learned that I couldn't trust people. Or my dog died and then I realized people can't be counted on. I mean, there's all kinds of things. So this is not just for people who have pasts. If you're breathing here today, someone made an illicit withdrawal from your account. Someone betrayed you, hurt you. Life did not show up the way that it was supposed to at some time. And so now we are going through life with an account that is less than what we started with. Now, there are two ways to deal with a deficit in the books from a bookkeeping perspective. When we first launched Humanity Church 15 years ago, I was the only one on payroll, and which meant that I was the pastor, I was the worship leader, I was the janitor, and I was also the bookkeeper. And so I took like a crash course on bookkeeping, and I was doing my thing, and things were running, and I was just hoping that the IRS was okay, right? All the things. Don't worry, now we're much more stable. Thank you, Leslie Garcia. And yes. But at the time, I kept checking in with my bookkeeping friends. Am I supposed to be doing what I'm doing? They said yes. They taught me a chart of accounts and how to balance all these things. And then I got to this conversation with a friend about 18 months into the thing. And they said, well, hey, how's your reconciliation going every month? And I said, what reconciliation? They said, you're reconciling the books every month, right? I said, I didn't know I was supposed to. What is this reconciling you speak of, right? And they explained to me, you're supposed to look at what got taken out, what got put into your bank account, and match it with what's in QuickBooks, and they're supposed to match every single month. I had not been doing this, and we were 18 months behind. Now, QuickBooks is a nice program because all you do is go in and click reconcile, and theoretically, when you put in what's in the bank and what's in QuickBooks, it should say zero, and you're reconciled, and you click okay. I did that, and guess what? We were off by 23 cents. 23 cents, right? And I was so frustrated. And my friend said, now you could do a couple of things, but the one thing that you could do with this is that you probably should go combing through all of your records to find where the 23 cents is off. And so I printed off 43 pages of transactions. And I sat down in the living room with Marla at the time, and I said, all right, let's go through this and match them up. Amazon, $18.29, rent, so-and-so. And we went through every single transaction, 43 pages of them. And by the time we were done, we were still off by 23 cents. And I was so frustrated. I was angry. I was bitter. I was resentful about what was happening with the QuickBooks. And we were still at a negative 23 cents. And here's what I thought. I just thought, we're not going to reconcile. We don't need to do this, right? So I close it out. But here's the problem with QuickBooks is QuickBooks sends you pop-ups every single time you open it. And it says, did you forget to reconcile? You're off by 23 cents. So every time I went to do a transaction, every time I went to make things happen, it would let me know that I was at a deficit of 23 cents. It would not let me forget about the negative 23 cents. See, here's what I found is that the longer that we live in a relational deficit with one another, when there's 23 cents even missing from our relational accounts, the natural result is bitterness. The natural result is frustration. The natural result is, right? Because life just keeps sending you pop-ups reminding you that you are at a deficit. Life keeps reminding you that you are off. Life keeps reminding you that you have lost something and that you are in a relational deficit. And this is what we do when we are at a deficit. We go searching through our relationships, trying to figure out how to make up for the deficit that was lost. We relationally keep trying to figure out, how do I make up for the 23 cents that's missing in life, what was taken from us, what was betrayed, the hurt, the pain, the resentment. We keep trying to figure out how to make up for it. And as much as we try to ignore it and put it away and say it's not a big deal, the pop-ups keep coming, reminding us that we are at a deficit. And there's quite a few problems with this, aren't there? Because how many of us have come to find that there are questions about our past that will never have a sufficient answer? Yeah. Have you found that to be true? Like, with all the deficits from our past, there are certain questions that our soul longs to have answered that will just never actually get answered. Why did they leave? Why did they choose to hurt me? What could I have done better or more effectively to fix this? Where was God? Why me? And there are no sufficient answers to those questions. In fact, your soul will just keep repeating the question because there are no answers that will ever sufficiently answer that question. And so we go on this exhaustive search for answers that are just not there. And it leaves us frustrated. But here's the other problem is that the deficit that we're in, the negative 23 cents, whatever was taken from us, the lack that we feel, it never actually stays between you and that person, does it? Have you noticed that? We have this nice fantasy that if my dad betrayed me or my friend hurt me or the coworker did something weird, that it just stays between us, that the anger, that the resentment, that the bitterness just stays between us. But the perspective that I take on because there is deficit now follows me everywhere. Now it's every single place that I see, all I see is the pop-up that you are living in a deficit. The perspective is constantly informing me that there is not enough, that someone has taken from me, and now I'm at a loss, and I need to make up for it. So I need to take what's mine no matter where it comes from. I need to make up for this no matter where I can find the difference in the middle of this. Hebrews 12:15 says, "See to it that no one falls short of the grace of God, and that no bitter root grows up to cause trouble and defile many." See, when we live in resentment, in unforgiveness, in bitterness, when we live with the deficit, it is never just between us and the other person. It goes out and it troubles much. And see, we think that when we're living in resentment, when we're unwilling to forgive, that we're just sticking it to the person, right? How many of you have been there? Let's be honest. I'm not gonna forgive them. I'm holding on to the power, right? I'm not gonna let them off the hook. But here's the thing. It is never between us and that person. It's like putting on tainted glasses, right? It's like putting on tinted glasses. And everything that you look at is now tinted because of the glasses that you have on, the lenses that you're wearing. For example, what color is this person up here? No, you're wrong. They're red. In fact, most of you are red. And the walls are now red. And the lights are now red. And see, now everywhere I look, all I can see is red and different tints. And I can actually not tell what color those lights are, or what color lights are coming down at me. I actually cannot see the color of your clothes because now the lenses are informing everything that I see. And everywhere that I look, it's all red. See, because when you allow bitterness to inform how you see the world, it informs your perspective everywhere you look. And when you allow bitterness to enter into your life, it is like putting on a pair of tinted glasses and you actually cannot see reality correctly. It's actually impossible to see what's actually out there. So everywhere that you look, all that you see is scarcity. When you look through the lenses, all you see is there's not enough, someone took from me, I need to make up for it. And so when I look out at my friends, my family, my neighbors, my coworkers, all I see is lack. All I see is the scarcity. All I see is the deficit. I keep seeing the 23-cent pop-up saying, you do not have enough. So the scarcity gets transferred onto them. See, it may have happened years ago with someone from your past, but I'm still wearing the lenses. And so I'm looking out and I bring it into every single other relationship and I need to now take from them rather than give to them because I gotta make up for the deficit. And that's all that I think about. See, but we hold on to the resentment, the bitterness, the regret because it makes us feel powerful, doesn't it? It makes us feel like we actually have some control over a situation that was out of our control. It makes us feel like we might actually be able to have an answer for a question that is unanswerable. And so when the pop-up comes up and says, hey, where's your 23 cents? The deficit's still here. You still have lack. We have something to do. And so we will make other people pay at all costs to get back what was owed to them, even if it means hurting the people closest to us. See, the problem is that when we live in unforgiveness, we're building a prison attempting to trap the other person. Meanwhile, we are the ones stuck in our own cell with the key, thinking that we're punishing them. All the while, they're probably out living their life. They're free. They're doing whatever they're doing. They might not even know your name anymore. And yet, we're still building the prison and wearing the lenses and seeing the world through the perspective of scarcity, trying to punish the person who took from you, all the while you stay stuck. And the problem is that they are making decisions now for you based on the perspective that you've put on. See, when you choose forgiveness, when you choose to live a lifestyle of forgiveness, when you choose to release the debt, it actually has nothing to do with the other person at all. It has nothing to do with what was done to you. It has nothing to do with what was taken from you. It has everything to do with how free you want to live. Yes. It has everything to do with the freedom that you long to step into and how free you want every single other relationship to be. I have two boys, Jackson and Colin. Jackson's 7, Colin is 5. Colin has this unique superpower to know how to push every single one of Jackson's buttons exactly how they need to be pushed. If you're an older sibling and have younger siblings, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But Colin's cute, but man, he is cunning. And he knows exactly how to look innocent and blow Jackson up all at the same time. And it's funny because I will watch him work his voodoo on Jackson, and all of a sudden Jackson's yelling and screaming and throwing things and running around. And I will calmly bring Jackson in there. Hey, Jackson, why don't you come on over here, bud? Let's have a conversation. And I ask him the same question every single time. And the question makes him so mad. Because I ask him, I just say, hey, come over here, bud. How long do you want to keep giving Colin all your power? I'm not giving Colin my power. He did this, he did that. Yeah, but you know what? He's calling the shots in your life right now. No, he's not. I'm doing that. No. Hold on. He's pressing the buttons, and you react, and he knows exactly what he's doing. So all I need to know from you is, how long do you plan on having Colin call the shots in your life? Because in that moment, Colin's calling all the shots. He has all the power. He's making all the decisions as to how Jackson is going to live, not because Jackson's powerless, but because Jackson is allowing his anger and resentment and his frustration, and he's taking his power and handing it over to Colin. And this is exactly what we do when we are unwilling to forgive. We take all of our personal power, we take all of our agency, we take all of our ability to make decisions about the future that we long to, and we hand it over to the person that we are bitter towards. We essentially take the keys to our life and say, here you go, drive my life to exactly where you want it to go. And this is what we do. We allow other people to make decisions for us when we are in resentment. See, the other way to reconcile the difference, to reconcile the 23 cents, is to actually forgive the debt. To actually say, no, we're gonna do over, we're gonna redo the debt here. To forego your right to collect on the debt, to forego your need to collect on the other debt. And this is what forgiveness does, is it says, look, you owe me something, and I can spend my entire life attempting to make up for it, and I will use all of my energy and my time and my resources trying to answer a question that is unanswerable, trying to make up for a deficit that can never be made up, or I can forego my right to collect on this debt and release myself from the obligation to make up for it and release ourselves. See, we actually think it's letting the other person off the hook, when in reality, it is about setting yourself free. It is about choosing to say, I no longer want them to call the shots in my life. I no longer wish to give them my power. I no longer wish to hand over the agency in my life. I am now going to choose to live in freedom, not just with them, but with every single other relationship in my life. By the way, forgiveness is not like a one and done process. I hear this all the time from people when we're talking or having some conversations or coaching or in some counseling. People will say things like this: oh, no, I forgave them 5 years ago. Right. How many of you have forgiven someone, and then you unforgive them? Yes? And you might not even consciously unforgive them. You're just like walking along and there it pops back up, right? I mean, I like to think of forgiveness like those whack-a-mole games at Chuck E. Cheese, you know, where it just pops up and you have the mouth, there it is again, boom, time to, there it is again. And it's just a constant discipline, because in our fantasy world, we forgave and now it is done. But the fact of the matter is that it pops right back up and we get to forgive all over again. For some of you, there are people in your life where you get the privilege of forgiving them every hour. It pops right back up, and then, oh, there, look at this opportunity to forgive, to release, to choose freedom over and over and over again. And I choose forgiveness daily in my life. It's just like a regular practice. It's like I wake up, take a shower, put on my deodorant, brush my teeth, and forgive. That's like a practice. And it should be like a daily practice for us, because I choose forgiveness daily because I have no intention of bringing my past into my marriage with Marla. I have no intention of allowing my past to dictate how I will parent my boys. I have no intention of allowing someone in my past who hurt me, who took from me, who betrayed me, who abandoned me, and allowing that to make decisions as to how I will be with my community. I have no intention of giving them that power. And so forgiveness becomes a regular personal practice in my life, because I am not interested in having anyone but Jesus call the shots in my life. But here's the thing about bitterness that I found is that it's so insidious because no one walks around saying, I'm bitter. Now, some people do. They're very refreshing to me, actually, because there are some people who are like, nope, I'm bitter and I refuse to forgive. And I'm like, great, you let me know when you want to take your power back. That's great. Most people are not walking around going, I'm living in bitterness, right? But the thing is that bitterness is like a poison that creeps in underneath the skin, and it's calling the shots, and so many times we're not even aware of it. But the great thing is that bitterness leaves clues. And if the clues are showing up, you know that resentment may be at play, that bitterness might be there. See, anywhere in your life that you say there's not enough, that's a telltale sign that you're living in unforgiveness. There's not enough money, there's not enough time, there's not enough energy, there's not enough hope, there's not enough freedom. That just lets you know, oh, I must be living in some resentment towards someone. Because if you look at the factory default, children don't live in scarcity. We pick that up somewhere. And there's some forgiveness to do. When we live in fear or worry or anxiety, it's usually like a telltale sign that there's some forgiveness still to do. When we find ourselves playing small, like, I know there's something inside of me that God wants to birth, that God wants to do. There's something he's calling me to engage in, and I don't know if it's for me. That's for other people. That's for people who are more talented. When we play small like that, that is a telltale sign that you are living in bitterness. When you find yourself having difficulty making decisions, you're like, I don't know what's the right decision, what's going to turn out, what's not going to turn out, telltale sign of bitterness. When you have difficulty completing what's in front of you, telltale sign of bitterness. There's clues that get left. See, we may not always be conscious of it, but it leaves clues, and we can allow the clues to inform us that there's some resentment at play, that there's some bitterness at play, that there's a deficit that I'm holding on to, and allow them to call us into a relationship with God saying, who are you calling me to forgive again? Or maybe for the first time, and release this power that they have over me. And if you needed any more motivation after Jesus has this conversation with Peter, telling him that he is to forgive 77 times, Jesus goes on and gives this parable. He says, therefore, the kingdom of heaven is like a king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. As he began the settlement, a man who owed him 10,000 bags of gold was brought to him. Since he was not able to pay, the master ordered that he and his wife and his children and all that he had be sold to repay the debt. At this, the servant fell on his knees before him. Be patient with me, he begged, and I will pay back everything. And the servant's master took pity on him, canceled the debt, and let him go. But when the servant found out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 silver coins. He grabbed him and began to choke him. Pay back what you owe me, he demanded. His fellow servant fell to his knees and begged him, be patient with me and I will pay you back. But he refused. Instead, he went off and he had the man thrown into prison until he could pay the debt. When the other servants saw what had happened, they were outraged and went and told their master everything that had happened. Then the master called the servant in. You wicked servant, he said. I canceled all that debt of yours because you begged me to. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant just as I had on you? In anger, his master handed him over to the jailers to be tortured until he should pay all back he owed. This is how my heavenly Father will treat each of you unless you forgive your brothers or sisters from your heart. See, the gift of Jesus is that he has forgiven us such a massive debt, a debt beyond what we could ever repay, a debt beyond which we could ever imagine. And on the cross, he took all of that. And he said, I choose to forgive you. It's what we celebrated on Easter, this moment where Jesus stepped into human history and decided that he would take on the debt that we owed the Father, and that he would forgive all of that, and that he would continue to forgive over and over and over again. A lifetime of destructive decisions. He just said, I will keep forgiving. It doesn't matter how much it is. I will keep forgiving. This is the beauty of Jesus. This is actually what sets us free, is that we are forgiven, and that we don't have to walk in shame or resentment or bitterness or hopelessness, that we can just know that we have been set free because Jesus has forgiven us. So when there is a small debt that our brother or sister owes us, when there's something that someone has taken from us, it would be insane not to forgive based on the amount of forgiveness that has been given to us, based on the amount of release and freedom that Jesus has poured out onto us. See, part of following Jesus is being marked as people who are forgiven and set free. That is the mark of a follower of Jesus. That I do not hold my past against me because Jesus does not hold my past against me. I do not hold my destructive choices against me because Jesus does not hold them against me. And so we are marked as people who have been forgiven. So let us choose to be those who forgive, who release the debt that people owe us. Not to let people off the hook, but to release ourselves from the bitterness and the resentment and the hopelessness that floods in when life doesn't turn out the way that it should. See, you don't get to choose your past. You don't get to choose who hurt you or who took from you. You don't get to choose the deficit that you live in. But you do get to choose what you do with it. You get to choose the perspective that you try on. And you can certainly live your entire life looking out at the world through scarcity and lack and trying to answer questions that are unanswerable and allowing the past to dictate the future that's available to you. Or you can forgive as Jesus has forgiven you and set yourself free in the process. See, you don't get to choose. You do get to choose if you stay in bondage or you are released into freedom. And this is the beautiful call of Jesus today. See, what would happen if we chose to be people who have been forgiven, and as a result, we forgive over and over and over again, and we become agents of freedom, not only in our lives, but in the world around us. See, the call to forgiveness is a call to liberation, not just for you, but for the world around you. Would you close your eyes and bow your heads just for a moment? This morning, if you're here, and maybe this conversation around forgiveness, it hit home. Look, the beautiful thing about this conversation is that it affects all of us. It's not like some people struggle with forgiveness and other people don't. All of us do. But maybe you're here today and you recognize that there's an extra level of bitterness in your life, like resentment. There's things from your past that maybe even today you just notice, oh my gosh, I'm allowing my past to dictate what's possible right here and now and in my future. And look, you can do a lot on your own, but it is impossible to step into full forgiveness if you have not been forgiven. And that is the gift of the cross. That is the gift of Jesus. And so this morning, if you're here and you have not yet connected to Jesus, if you've not stepped into a relationship with him, he wants to step into a relationship with you and forgive you so that you can live free. And so first today, if you've not yet connected to a relationship with Jesus, just decide to make him Lord of your life. Or maybe you did a long time ago and you're back today and you're like, man, I've wandered away. This is your moment. If that's you today and you're like, man, I want to step into a relationship with Jesus, would you just raise your hand for a moment? Awesome. Who else? Yeah. All over the room. If you're online, you can just type Jesus in the chat. I want you just to pray this prayer with me. It's really simple. Just say, Jesus, I give you my life. Jesus, I give you my life. If you prayed that prayer right now, I want to pray for you. Jesus, I thank you for those individuals in this room right now who choose forgiveness, who choose the cross, who choose you. I ask that you would come, that you would fill them right now with your spirit, that they would know that they are forgiven because of the cross, that you came back to life and rose again so that they could find life today. Now, for those of you in the room who maybe today you recognize that you've grabbed onto forgiveness, maybe there's people in your life, unforgiveness, maybe there's people in your life who you forgave and you unforgave them and they popped back up. Maybe you recognize that fear, that worry, all of the indecisiveness, you're playing small, you're wondering if there's a future available for you. Maybe you found yourself just struggling, today is the day where you get to forgive. Maybe you're living in scarcity, like your life is just like, there's not enough. There's not enough hope. There's not enough freedom. There's not enough tomorrow. My life's not going to turn out the way I long for it to. This is your moment to forgive. And look, it's as easy as a choice from moment to moment to forgive. And it's not a one and done, but this may be the start today. So if that's you, I'd like for you just to even just get the name of the person or the people in your mind that you're going to forgive right now. Just want you to hold on to that. Maybe you can even see their face. And again, this is not about letting them off the hook. This is not about what they did is okay. This is not about dismissing it. In fact, it's the opposite. It's saying, I choose to no longer have this control my life and my decision making. So if that's you, in your own way, would you just out loud, I'm gonna ask you just out loud, do it all together, just say, I forgive you. Would you just do that right now? I forgive you, whoever that is. And just as an act of obedience, just say, I forgive you. And just release the debt. And as you do that, just feel the freedom that you now get to partner with Jesus in crafting the future that he longs for you. Nothing from your past, no one else, no hurt, no pain, no resentment gets to inform you anymore. Now look, it may pop back up and you may need to forgive again in like 5 minutes. That's okay. But just make it a discipline today. Choose to make this a regular part of your spiritual routine so that you decide that this does not affect any other relationship inside of you. Jesus, we thank you for your forgiveness. May we be people who are marked as forgiven and people that mark the world as forgivers. We thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's podcast. We hope that it was a meaningful experience and look forward to having you listen in next week for another conversation from the heart and soul of Humanity Church. You can find more information about our community at www.humanitychurch.com.